Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Long and Winding Railroad, episode 43. And, you know, I have to say, it's been a while since we've actually covered a match that was set in the 90s. We kind of going all over the place recently. But we're back in the 90s, and we're back with a classic match from the 90s. And who better than Daniel Makabe to join me on this episode to talk about this classic tag match? Because he's like a tag specialist for the Long and Winding Railroad. And Daniel is taking time out of his busy schedule to record this with me from his retirement tour. He's going to be wrapping things up as a professional wrestler pretty much by the end of the year, before the end of the year, and among other things. And Daniel, thank you for joining me, and how are you?
End of the year. It's only 6 weeks. That's it.
That's it. Never mind. Before the end of the summer. Yeah. Before the end of the summer.
July 12th is it. That's the end. But yes, thank you for having me back. I really enjoy this program because it, you know, it lets me revisit matches that I've seen lots of times, but also introduces me to lots of classic matches that I'd never seen before, be them from the 90s or not. And I always enjoy getting to talk to you about this stuff, WH. So, yeah, thank you for having me back. And, yeah. I'm a noted singles wrestler. I've maybe had 5 tag matches in, like, the last 10 years. And I've exclusively done tag matches on this show. So there you go.
There you go. Well, maybe next time we have you on the show, even though you're retiring from wrestling, I'm hoping you're not going to retire from appearing on this show in the future.
I'm going to have entirely too much time for social media, which I'm already trying to pull back on that. So, but I'll have more time to watch old wrestling probably. Yeah.
So, that sounds good. But we'll talk about your retirement tour, because on your retirement tour in June, you're going to be stopping here in Toronto for what is been billed as your last match in Ontario. Is that correct?
It might actually be my last match in Canada at this point, which is, yeah. And it's not just, I mean, I'm going all over the place. Like, as the time of recording, I'm going to be in Calgary this week, but by the time this comes out, that will already have happened. But if you're watching this when this drops tonight, I'll be in Victoria, British Columbia. Then I've got stuff all over the Northwest, Seattle, Portland. Then some stuff in British Columbia, and then I'm doing a weekend in Ontario. I'm doing Ottawa, Guelph, and Toronto on 3 back-to-back days, and Toronto is the final one in Ontario and probably the final one in Canada at this point, so, which is crazy. Yeah.
So who are you wrestling for in Ottawa and in Guelph?
Ottawa is going to be Friday, June 28th for C4. Match TBA. Saturday in Guelph will be for 365 Pro Wrestling, which is a promotion based here in Victoria, British Columbia, that also has kind of a sister branch of their promotion that they run in Southern Ontario. So that's on Sunday, June 29th, again, TBA. And then, yes, Saturday or Sunday afternoon, June 30th, for Smash Wrestling in Toronto, downtown Toronto.
That's right. Smash Wrestling, June 30th, Put Up or Shut Up, which and this show actually includes free viewings of Forbidden Door on the big screen following the wrestling show. And doors are 3 p.m. First bell is 4 p.m. And the pay-per-view pre-show starts at 6:30 p.m. You can get your tickets at smash-wrestling.com. Yeah, and it's going to be held at the Rec Room. Toronto branch of the Rec Room, which is near the harborfront area. Basically, it's right across from where the CN Tower is. So it would be difficult to not be able to find this. Yeah. You could always check Google Maps. But you know what? I reached out, Daniel, to the promoters of Smash Wrestling and said, hey, we're going to have one of your wrestlers on our show, and maybe we can do a giveaway for this June 30th show. So the people who enjoy your appearances on the Long and Winding Railroad maybe can come meet you and maybe buy some merch from you, maybe get a photo with you.
Come say hi. If you want to buy merch, that's great. Don't feel inclined to do so. There you go. But yeah, take photos. WH, you're going to be there potentially. You're going to be in the area.
I am discussing with my friends as we record this, they're messaging me. We're deciding where to sit. I should be at this show, and I'll be wearing my – actually, I'm not wearing it right now. I should wear it right now. But my new Daniel Makabe t-shirt that I got a couple of months ago.
I'm wearing my nice long and winding Royal Road hoodie that I got in the mail.
Today I'm wearing the Five Pillars shirt here.
Oh, very nice. I can appreciate someone wearing their own merch for their own podcast recording.
but I will be sporting your t-shirt which I love, by the way. I think it's such a great t-shirt. It's the one that's kind of looks like a Catch Wrestling logo, company logo or something like that. I love that one.
It's definitely inspired by, obviously, the UWF logo, but also the pro wrestling Fujiwara Gumi. Fujiwara's promotion that he ran for like 3 years in the early 90s.
That's right.
Definitely less than subtle nods to both of those promotions.
I know you'll love yourself some Yoshiaki Fujiwara.
Maybe the most underrated pro wrestler of all time. He worked All Japan in like the 2000s when they were really struggling for native talent. So maybe we can sneak him in an episode at some point.
Yeah, let's see. If you find something that's All Japan or All Japan adjacent and it's got Fujiwara in it and you want to talk about it, you just drop me a message from Daniel.
Okay.
No problem. But we actually have a giveaway we're going to have a trivia contest that we're going to drop some questions at the end of this episode. So you got to listen all the way to the end. We have two pairs of tickets, and I'll reiterate all this at the end of the show. But if you want to win these, you got to answer the question that we're going to present to you. They're both Daniel Makabe related, and we'll tell you the questions at the end. And then just email me at whpark9, that's the number 9, at gmail.com. And I will forward your information. The first people to contact me with the correct answers to these questions, I will forward your information to the Smash Wrestling office, and they will put you on a list for you to come out June 30th to Put Up or Shut Up featuring Daniel Makabe. And did I tell people who you're facing? I haven't talked about this card. You know, I'm going to talk about this card really quickly. So Put Up or Shut Up June 30th at the Rec Room here in Toronto. And you and a friend can go. You just have to send me the correct answer and your full name that we can put on the glasses. But on this show, Kevin, Daniel, that you're on. Sorry, it's because I'm looking at the graphic of some of these matches. But Kevin Blackwood, who's a great wrestler out of Buffalo, will be taking on someone you know very well, Timothy Thatcher.
I'm genuinely excited to watch that match in person. So that's very cool. You just told me about this a minute ago. I don't know what the card is. So
also on this show, Mark Wheeler. We'll take on Von Vertigo. Vanna Black will take on Jody Threat. And then a tag team match. Smash Tag Team Champions Sinner and Saint will take on the Motor City Machine Guns of Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin. But Daniel, your match will be against Psycho Mike, who is the current Smash Wrestling World Champion. So you could be coming out of your final Ontario match as the reigning but not defending Smash Wrestling World Champion, possibly.
I've got a number of title matches in the next 6 weeks, and I might just be retiring with a bunch of belts on my mantle. But another trivia fact for some, but I've actually wrestled Psycho Mike once before. We wrestled in Blackpool in the UK, basically the week that the global pandemic started, when Canada and a bunch of other countries who were way more ahead of things than the UK were, we're closing down. Psycho Mike and I wrestled at the Blackpool Tower in Blackpool, England, and I beat Psycho Mike, the one and only time we've wrestled before. So, I mean, it's been 4+ years, but maybe I still have his number. I don't know.
Maybe he's like been like stewing in his revenge juices.
That is not at all out of character for him. So yeah, very, very likely. But
okay, well, folks, if you want to see the rematch of the half decade, because it's like 4 years, 5 years, it's close enough, right?
It feels entirely longer than that.
It does. You can see it live June 30th for Smash Wrestling's Put Up or Shut Up show at the Rec Room. And tickets are on sale over at smash-wrestling.com. But we'll do the trivia at the end for the ticket giveaways. But Daniel, we're going to talk about a match that you and I both thought,
love.
You know, this would be a good choice because also, you know, not just because you're a tag team specialist for the Long and Winding Railroad, but because it's just such a classic match. And we're going to talk about Kenta Kobashi and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi taking on the Can-Am Express of Doug Furness and Doug Crawford from May 25th, 1992. Not 95, as I wrote on Twitter, unfortunately. But, you know, you'd think with all the changes they made to Twitter, Daniel, they'd let you edit your fucking tweets. But no, they don't do that. But anyways, this is from Sendai, Miyagi, Japan, at the Miyagi Prefectural Gymnasium. It is from the All Japan Pro Wrestling Superpower Series of 1992, day 8 of that tour. And attendance for this show was 5,500. I believe that's a sellout, which you can believe if you watch this match and you listen to the crowd. It's definitely very, very, very full.
Yeah. I mean, the first time I ever saw this match, it was probably 25 years ago now, but it was on a comp from a notorious tape dealer from Greater Philadelphia. And I remember buying it as a teenager. And just the caption of it was "greatest crowd ever?" ? And I mean, certainly, you know, per capita, you know, like obviously there have been larger crowds and probably louder crowds, but have there ever been a louder 5,000 people in a room watching a wrestling match than this? I'm not convinced there has been, because I mean, I just rewatched this and the crowd is like, they're like such a, you know, they're like a third of this match. It's like, you know, the Super Generation Army and the Can-Ams and the crowd, like that's, well, you know, three equal parts.
I mean, before we get to the match, we could talk about the crowd, because a lot of people make that statement that it's the probably one of the greatest crowds, if not the greatest crowd to watch a wrestling match, to the point where they enhance the viewing of this on tape.
Yeah,
like you get sucked into the energy of the crowd, and the primary reason that this, I would say that this crowd is so invested in this match, is because that Tsuyoshi Kikuchi is from Sendai.
Yes.
He is their hometown boy. He's coming back with the increasingly popular, this is like the rise, 1992 is like the rise of Kenta Kobashi to a level where he's going to be joining Misawa and Kawada on their level. He's not there yet.
No.
Him and Kikuchi are the secondary tag team of the Super Generation Army. Misawa and Kawada are the main primary tag team. They are the ones who go after the world tag team titles, but the All Asia tag team titles, which is, you know, for people who don't know, the All Asia tag team titles, I can liken it to having like their version of the United States tag team titles that were Jake Crockett Promotions. Basically, when the world tag team title belts are held by different teams that the promoters want to promote, but hey, we got these mid-card belts that we can use to focus on younger up and coming talent.
Yep.
Let's put them on people that we want to push, but we don't want to push too hard, so to speak. But
and they almost, you know, like they become more of a, you know, like you said, a mid-card belt, but they're kind of more of a work rate belt, you know. I mean, they were with Crockett, you know, like you had the Fantastics and you know, later on like the Young Pistols, and obviously like the Midnights, you know, fighting for those belts. And just like, you know, here, like, yeah, they're, you know, they're the lesser pushed title, but it doesn't mean that the matches are, you know, any less good, right? You know, they're
even up until like the 2010s, like when you know, from Big Japan Pro Wrestling, Daisuke Sakamoto and Yuji Okabayashi won those belts, even though they're Big Japan wrestlers, they put them on them. They were having, I think, better matches than whoever held the world tag titles at the time. So,
that's unfair because those guys are dynamite, but yeah, and this is the same. You covered a match on this show maybe close to a year ago now for the All Asias that I had never seen before. That was, I think, Hayabusa and Shinzaki versus Izumita and Honda, maybe, tag match from the late 90s. And it was for the All Asias, and I'd never seen that match, and it was amazing. So if you missed that episode or you haven't watched that match, go back, watch it, listen to to WH's episode. But yeah, I love that match.
Before we get into the actual match, I want to talk about the Can-Ams.
Yep.
Because, you know, they're a tag team that's very much ingrained into the roster of All Japan throughout from 1989 up until I'd say 96.
Yep.
They're staples of the tours. Baba loves them, but he never pushed them beyond All Asia. He never pushed them really too hard. They never reached the level of the Miracle Violence Connection. They never reached the level of Stan Hansen and Dan Spivey or whoever was teaming with Stan Hansen, or Misawa Kawada, Misawa Kobashi, Kawada Tawe. But I feel that, and I feel that's kind of a misstep on his part, because I think you could have pushed the Can-Ams to a higher level. I think they should have got at least one run with the World Tag Team titles to reward them for like how good they were and how loyal they were to Baba and the All Japan, promotion. Because I think Furnace and Crawford are such an amazing tag team and really suited to All Japan of the time and all. And really what was great about them was that they could wrestle anyone. They could wrestle junior heavyweights. They could wrestle the Fantastics, which they did. They could wrestle incoming foreign tag teams like the State Patrol. They wrestled them to wrestling like the bigger guys and heavyweights of like Misawa Kobashi and you know, Hansen, whoever he's teaming with, and Kawada and Tawe. What do you think about like the Can-Ams?
They're a great tag team. I think, people who are in the know obviously know them. But I mean, on the general, wrestling landscape, I think it's fair to say they're underrated. Certainly anyone who only knows them from their WWF run would, not think much of them. They weren't really suited to the WWF. And obviously by that point, they're definitely broken down from, a decade of working a really taxing style in All Japan. And I think, I don't know if it's confirmed by either of them. Obviously Doug Furnace is no longer with us, but I think Dan Crawford is still alive. I think that is why they left All Japan, was because they were promised to finally get moved up the cards and be one of the more featured tag teams. Like, I don't think they even ever placed high in the Real World Tag League any years. They were always kind of like mid card fodder. They'd get their three or four wins and then, be putting over a lot of the bigger named tag teams, but that's what ended up leading to them leaving All Japan in the late 90s and taking the offer from WWF and trying to make something. They also had a cup of coffee in ECW, but yeah, really underrated, and like you said, both of them are strong. Furnace is ridiculously strong, but they're both so agile as basically heavyweights. I know Crawford was a part of the All Japan Junior division. He might have even been a junior champion at one point.
Yes.
He's one of the but he's not a small man. Like, it's just, that's the era where, you could be 6 foot 230 and that's a junior weight in 1992. But great tag team and just great wrestlers in general. But just so well suited to each other. And they play their part so well in this match. They play multiple roles, both as just an outstanding athletic work rate tag team, but also just like nonchalant dicks who are, they're the heels of the match.
They're the perfect foils for Kobashi and Kikuchi in this match that happens in Sendai. And one thing before we get on back to the crowd a bit is that, like, I always think to myself, would this match get the same reaction if it was held in Tokyo, for example, either at Korakuen Hall or Sumo Hall, or whether it's another big market like Yokohama, Osaka, or Fukuoka? And I would say yes, because I think the work in of itself stands up. I think that the match dynamics work the same. It's just you had that added bonus of Kikuchi being from Sendai and wrestling in front of his hometown that you get as passionate. But do I think they like this, people will be sitting on their hands in other markets in Japan for this match? No. I think they would be well up for it, especially it's a title match. And those are important in Japan at this time. There aren't like 1700 titles in one promotion as it is now in Japan. So I think it would still be special, but I think being in Sendai, being in front of Kikuchi's hometown, it gives it that little extra oomph to the crowd. But I think they could have got a similar reaction in definitely in Korakuen Hall.
I think not only could you move this match to any other location in Japan, I think it plays well, you know, how do I put this? I was thinking about this as I was watching it. I think this match is truly timeless, and maybe I'll save that for maybe when we're doing more of an epilogue and kind of wrapping up. But, you know, this match takes place in the spring of 1992. I think you can put this in the spring of 1982 and it'd be kind of ahead of its time then, but it would fit. 1972, maybe not so much. That's a little too far back. But let's go into the future. 2002, 2012, 2022. Now, I don't think it feels out of place in any of these decades. And it's the work is so timeless. There are still some really exciting moves, but nothing that's like excessive or illogical. Like, it's just the work is so smart and athletic. And these guys are all just so good. And I just think it's a timeless match. And I think time or place doesn't matter. This match knocks it out of the park.
Oh, for sure. It is like a lot of the great matches from All Japan Pro Wrestling in the 90s. It can work in the past. It can work in the future. It can work now. These matches are timeless, and this is no exception. So let's talk about the match. We're going to talk about the card first. I want to run down the card of this. I like to do that.
I love when you do this, because you hear about just random undercards that you never think about, because a lot of times, I mean, in 1992, All Japan had an hour of television, but by 93 or 94, they're down to 30 minutes of television. And a lot of these undercard matches you don't get to see until, you know, years later. A lot of this stuff got unearthed for All Japan Classics. And now, obviously, with the internet, you know, everything's at our fingertips. But these are so interesting. I love when you do this. Sorry, I cut you off. But
No, not at all. So this is from Sendai in Miyagi Prefecture, the Miyagi Prefectural Gymnasium. So we start off with a singles match between Mighty Inoue as he defeats Masao Inoue in 8 minutes and 6 seconds. Bobby Fulton of the Fantastics defeats Satoru Asako in 11 minutes and 24 seconds. His partner, his cousin, the guy who plays his Tommy Rogers, Jackie Fulton, defeats Ricky Nelson with 2 Ks in 10 minutes and 59 seconds. Six-man tag team match, Giant Baba, Rusher Kimura, and Ryuma Izumida defeat Haruka Aigen, Masanobu Fuchi, and Motoshi Okuma in 22 minutes and 56 seconds, which seems a little excessive for a mid-card old dude comedy match. But
I guess it's kind of a house show. not the time I was expecting you to say.
But you know what? People love to see, you know, Giant Baba in these matches.
So. I love Masafuchi. I think he's great. If we didn't do this match, I was going to suggest the Masafuchi match. But yeah,
we can always do a Masafuchi match in the future.
Sure. Sounds good.
Oh, well, you know, we talked about him. He's actually on the show. Tommy Rogers took on Dean Malenko.
That sounds good.
That sounds like a good match. And defeating him in 13 minutes, 26 seconds. Sounds like a perfect length of a match, too, for my taste. Of course, this match that we're going to talk about, Super Generation Army taking on the Can-Am Express. But semi-main event, the Super Generation Army of Mitsuhara Misawa and Toshiaki Kawada take on and defeat Johnny Smith and the Patriot in 14 minutes and 30 seconds. I'm a big fan of Johnny Smith. I think he's so underrated.
Johnny Smith is underrated. Still lives in Canada, apparently. He's a police officer in Calgary. Doesn't like talking about wrestling. So, he is underrated. So are you telling me this match wasn't the main event of this show?
No, the main event is a six-man tag match featuring the Miracle Violence connection of Steve Williams and Terry Gordy, teaming with Gordy's younger cousin, Richard Slinger, who Gordy got into the All Japan Dojo, and he even stayed throughout the Noah years with this roster. And they took on and defeated the Tsuruta Gun, consisting of Akira Taue, Jumbo Tsuruta, and Yoshidari Ogawa. And I wonder who took the pin on that. Probably Ogawa.
I have a sneaking suspicion. Yes.
probably from like a Terry Gordy lariat or Steve Williams Oklahoma Stampede, one of those two. I'm sure Yoshinori Gawa, because he not only is a junior heavyweight in this match, but he's also a young boy, so he's going to get ragdolled by the MVC and probably a little bit by Richard Slinger as well.
That's crazy to me that the match we're about to talk about was not. I just always assumed it was the main event.
No, it's third from the top. But crazy. I, if I was Baba, I just would have switched it around. I don't know. Like, you know what? Kikuchi's from Sendai. We should just make it the main event. Why not? It's not going to hurt. Honestly, they probably sold 5,000 of these tickets based on Kikuchi challenging for the All Asians with Kobashi. So yeah, that's my guess. Okay, so get into the match. Both teams make their entrance to raucous applause and cheers from the fans. Even the Can-Ams get great reaction from the fans, probably because their entrance song is so catchy. I don't know what the name of it is, but it's very catchy. The All-Asia tag belts are presented to Kikuchi and Kobashi by an official as part of the match ceremony. And Crawford goes over, does a little finger wave, basically saying, "You're not getting these." And that itself gets a huge reaction from the fans. So it can be said, Daniel, that this is the first high spot of this match, the little finger wave.
I you know what might actually be an even earlier high spot, which I noted that the commentator even called it like it was a high spot, was Kobashi enters over by, like, you know, vaulting himself over the top rope, as many people do. And the announcer even, you know, he says, like, you know, big entrance or jump or whatever. And then Furness and Crawford, like, time it so they both vault in at the same time, and it gets a whoa for their entrance. So, you know, guys are over when them just entering the ring gets a reaction.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, that's Kobashi's kind of before his knees went out. That was kind of his way of getting into the ring was jumping over the top rope.
I did notice there was no tape to be found on the knees.
He's in his, like, extra padding, like the kind of the light tanned color. It's when he gets to the black padding underneath his orange knee pads that, okay, this is where the moonsaults have definitely taken their toll on his knees. But we're not at that point in 1992 yet, no. So ring introductions are made, and of course Kikuchi gets the biggest pop, followed by Kobashi, and then a chorus of boos for Furness and Crawford. And by the way, for those of you listening, if I ever slip and say LaFon, it's because that's what he was known as in WWF, Phil LaFon. And when I was typing my notes, I have to say there's points where I was like, Furness and LaFon. No, Crawford. It's Crawford. Our referee is the legendary Kyohei Wada, wearing a very fashionable light purple referee shirt here. We need more purple referee shirts in wrestling.
It's kind of a fuchsia. I noticed that as well. Yeah, it stood out. And of course, he's maybe the greatest referee of all time. So
I would make that argument, like, yeah, from 1989 to basically when he replaces Joe Higuchi as the main ref for All Japan Wrestling, up until, I'd say, the Muto era of All Japan, he is the greatest referee working in the business. But hometown boy Kikuchi and Crawford start the match off. They're sizing each other up, and then Crawford slaps Kikuchi, which is a big mistake, as this fires him up, and Kikuchi just launches a barrage of forearms to the face of Crawford, and this ignites this crowd. And we're not even 5 minutes into the actual match, Daniel. Like, I love the way he just jumps up and just grabs the guy's back of the guy's head and just starts laying into his forearms. It's great.
Kikuchi, like, I mean, a short man, you know, was a junior heavyweight, and, you know, was working with a lot of bigger guys in these big tags. But I love this, you know, this kind of not cat and mouse, but, you know, like, Crawford very cocky, kind of slaps him to cut off Kikuchi. I think Kikuchi's trying to tie up with him, and he cuts it off with a slap, and then they come back around, and Crawford's like, okay, I'll tie up with you now. And Kikuchi's like, no, now I'm ready to hit your back. And it almost turns into, like, how Shibata will, you know, like, down his opponents into the corner with his forearms to set up his big drop kick. Kikuchi basically levels Crawford all the way back to the corner and down into the ground, and the people are going crazy, and we're, like, less than a minute into this match.
Yeah, I mean, the assault from Kikuchi onto Crawford is so intense. Like Furtis decides, I got to get in and help him. He's going to get murdered by this guy. But Kyoi Wada stops him. And this crowd is just going crazy. They're just like so into it. And it's so early in the match. So it's amazing. And really, there haven't been any outside of the finger wave and the jumping over the rope from Kobashi. There's not been any high spots to really kind of fire them up. But it's enough. You know, this intensity from Kikuchi, who, like, if you watch Kikuchi matches, right, if you go deep and watch some of his matches, like, one thing I love about Kikuchi is that he is, for a guy who's smaller than a lot of the other stars of the company, he has so much fire that you can believe he could possibly eke out a win against, like, Kawada. Or one of my favorite opponents of his is Jumbo Tsuruta, because Jumbo Tsuruta will just beat the crap out of this guy. It's amazing.
He ragdolls him. Actually, the first time I was on this show, we watched a Kobashi and Kikuchi versus Jumbo and Tawei match. And I remember the first time seeing that match, the finish is Tsuruta giving Kikuchi the gnarliest backdrop suplex I think I've ever seen still to this day. And yeah, they definitely took it out on poor Kikuchi that night.
He loved to beat up Kikuchi. I have the feeling like he's like, oh, I'm facing Kikuchi? Awesome. I get to just beat him up. It's great. Finally, Crawford is able to find a space to bail out of the ring away from Kikuchi. And the Kikuchi chants ring out throughout the building as Furnace and Crawford regroup out on the floor. Crawford and Kikuchi lock up again, and Crawford is forced into his opponent's corner where Kobashi tags in. And now there's a loud Kobashi chant that start to fill the building. Crawford thrusts, kicks him into the corner, and he lays in his chop. But Daniel, this is kind of fucking Kobashi we were talking about. And he's not going to stand for getting chopped, so he reverses positions and lays into Crawford. And then there's a couple of more reversal positions between the two, and it's a nice back and forth here.
Yeah, it's great. And Crawford throws, like, these really quick chops. Like, he almost breaks up the rhythm you're used to seeing guys throw chops with. And it's like, he almost knows, like, I got to throw three when someone would normally throw one or two, because I know any second now Kobashi's going to fire back up on me. And he does, because he's Kenta Kobashi, and that's what he does. Especially, yeah, 1992 Kenta Kobashi still got all that fire, those chops. I mean, great opening sequence with these guys.
Kobashi takes control of the match with his superior strength and power. Crawford is able to find an opening and tags in his partner, Big Doug Furnace. They shoot Kobashi into the ropes and hit him with double flying shoulder tackles. Kind of a staple in tag team wrestling. I feel almost every tag team, especially in All Japan, uses like a variation of the football shoulder tackle, whether it's MVC, Furnace and Crawford. See, I almost did it. Furnace and various iterations of the Super Generation Army. It's a very common move in tag team wrestling, especially in All Japan.
Very common. These guys do the nice, like, they got the athletic jump into it. And Furnace was like a star college football player. That's where he got scouted, in Knoxville, Tennessee, in the like mid-80s. So it makes sense.
Furnace keeps on top of Kobashi with forearms to the back, a body slam, and some kicks to the back that hurt Kobashi's pride more than his body. Kobashi reverses an Irish whip and hits a beautiful drop kick. And then, you know, as a receipt, he lays in his own kicks to the back before tagging in Kikuchi. And, you know, being a wrestler, Daniel, like, when someone kicks you in the back and might not necessarily do that much damage to you, but do you feel like, okay, that's not cool, I'm gonna lay into you when I get you in a similar position?
Yeah, it depends on who's kicking you. Some people kick you and it was like, oh, okay, yeah, we're doing this. I love the thing about these two guys is, you know, like we said, Crawford and Furnace are, you know, they're tough guys. They hit hard, but like when they're, you know, playing defensive and when they're getting, you know, on the other end of hits from Kobashi and Kikuchi, they like jump into everything. Like they're eating these drop kicks right in the face, and just, I mean, they're professionals. I'm just really impressed by their work, both giving and receiving. So
I mean, they to work, I think, in All Japan, you have to take as well as you give. Like you should be able to receive.
Certainly at that level. Like obviously there are people who, you know, built like Stan Hansen sells in the right situations, but he's not selling like these guys are selling, right? There's not the same level of volume, I guess, but.
No, for sure. For sure. Stan Hansen, you know, it means something when he sells for you.
Yes.
You know, if, especially if you're younger guy, he's not necessarily, forearm, whatever. Misawa. Okay. I better sell for that guy. You know, Kikuchi jumps at Furnace with a forearm. And again, such a great looking move. That's unique to him. He whips him into the ropes and hits a great looking leg lariat that gets the fans on their feet. It's another staple of his. It's the leg lariat.
Yeah. And then I think Crawford goes to cut him off and immediately gets his whip reversed and gets hit with another leg lariat himself. So the people, I love the ebbs and flows of it. You know, like they are really establishing these guys really well right off the get go. And the people are along for the ride.
So I have a question for you as a wrestler.
Yeah.
On the last episode, we talked about the Dojo documentary from 2020. Yeah. And in that documentary, the trainer, Yuma Aoyagi, talks about how they are trained in the All Japan Dojo. And if you watch All Japan matches or guys who are trained in the All Japan Dojo / Noah system, they hit the ropes with their side, with their sides.
Yep.
Not their full back.
Yep.
And, you know, like Aoyagi explains that this actually hurts more.
Yep.
But they do it because it gives them more force rebounding off the ropes and looks more powerful. So that's why they do it. So if you watch, say, for example, Kenta, he does this.
Yep.
Naomichi Marufuji, he does this. In this match, of course, Kobashi and Kikuchi do it. But interestingly enough, both Crawford and Furnace hit the ropes the same way. And where do you kind of like, what's your kind of point of view about how to hit the ropes?
I was actually taught the other way, to hit it with your back. And you always kind of guide yourself. We're just breaking down curtains, but it's all good. You try to guide yourself to the ropes using your right hand on the top rope. And that also acts as a way to kind of protect yourself. The odd chance, if you ever see like a rope snap when someone hits it and they go flying out to the floor or whatever, you know, obviously it's quite scary. You can land on your head, whatever. So the first thing you're doing before you're even hitting the ropes with your back is you're grabbing onto the top rope with your right hand. And there's some schools of thought, you know, a lot of lucha, you'll see where they actually grab the middle rope with their left hand as well. I was never taught that. I was never taught the sideways method, I guess. I think a lot of that developed back in the day when they used real rope in wrestling rings, and it was a little bit easier to do that sideways method with rope versus cable. I think it just sort of translated to where, you know, whatever American influences came to Japan and said, this is how you properly run the ropes. Because this is cable, I'm pretty sure. They're not using rope in these. And it's like, well, we still hit them sideways. I fully expect it to hurt more than it would hitting with your back, because there's more surface area in your back. There's less, you know, you don't have ribs and stuff to hit. I've never been taught to run and hit it with my side. So I honestly don't know the difference, because I've never known anything other than hitting it with my back and grabbing onto the top rope. But
yeah. I mean, I just think I get the impression that most people do the full back method to protect, you know, to kind of spread out the impact of hitting the ropes or cables.
Even when you first start, you know, for the first couple of weeks of wrestling school, which at this point was almost 21 years ago, actually it was like June of 2003, I started wrestling school. For the first couple of weeks, you end up with bruises like along your shoulder blades and then along your lower back for the top rope and the middle rope from hitting them repetitively and over again. And your back just doesn't know what to think of this. So, yeah, you feel it when you get used to it, obviously. But at first, it's not comfortable.
No. Imagine it's just like the under part of your arm and your ribs. Yeah. Instead of your whole back and shoulders. Back to the match. Furnace takes control of Kikuchi with a side headlock. And then he knocks over Kikuchi with a beast of a shoulder tackle off the ropes. And that's the thing I like about the Can-Ams, is like he's the power guy. But he could hit an amazing looking dropkick. He hits which he does in this match. He hits an amazing looking jumping Frankensteiner. But my God, this man is so strong that you do not want to mess with this. I would say he's on par with Dr. Death Steve Williams in terms of power.
I think he, like, I mean, pound for pound, like, he actually did set, like, powerlifting records in the 80s. Like, he might have actually been stronger than Steve Williams. And he's not a small man, but he's, like, he's leaner and, like, more cut than Steve Williams. Like, he's built more like a bodybuilder than Steve Williams was, but and certainly more agile than Steve Williams, but ridiculously strong. Absolutely.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com.
And then you have Crawford, who's kind of more, he has martial arts background. He has more of a traditional wrestling background. But the thing with Furnace is that that guy can wrestle as well. And after this beast of a shoulder tackle, Daniel, we get this great camera shot of Crawford in the foreground on the apron, applauding his partner's power with a clap and a smug look on his face, which the crowd, whoever notices that, they just start booing. That it's so great. It's just a small little thing he does. It's just the clap, but also that, like, the smile and the nodding of his head. It's amazing.
They don't, like, you know, before we kind of got into the play-by-play, I said that they play, you know, multiple parts. They're good athletic wrestlers, but they're also good pricks. They don't overdo the prick side of things. It's just, like, enough. And it's not subtle, but, like, you know, they don't beat you over the head with it. It's sort of like every so often you get moments like this where, like, yeah, we know we're this good. And yeah, I appreciate, you know, the quality of my tag partners, you know, like, it just kind of reinforces it, but it doesn't ever overdo it or overemphasize it. It's just the right amount.
Yeah. I think my problem with, like, modern quote unquote heels in, especially in Japan, is like, they want to hit you over the head. Like, look, I'm a heel. Look how dastardly I am. It's like, you don't have to just be kind of like an asshole, like, to a certain level. Don't hit over the people like, look, I'm doing heelish things. Look at me. Please just watch old wrestling. That's the best way to learn, I feel, is just watch old wrestling. Ah, they had the palm in the crown of their hands and no one's laughing at them or with them. They're actually trying to be heels subtly, and that works so well.
Yep.
Back to the match. Kikuchi tries to mount a comeback with some forearms, but Furnace cuts him off literally at the legs by lifting him up with a double leg takedown, going back to that strength and power that we talk about, and slamming him straight onto his back, onto the mat. Crawford tags in, hits a reverse savate kick. He then tries for a suplex, but Kikuchi blocks it and hits a beautiful-looking snap suplex that would make the Dynamite Kid envious.
Yeah, there's definitely there's an influence there. And I wouldn't doubt if, you know, obviously the Bulldogs come over in the, like, mid-80s to All Japan, probably around the time that Kikuchi's coming up, because, yeah, there's the snap suplex. There's, you know, spoilers, there's a diving headbutt later on. There's definitely a subtle Bulldog influence on Kikuchi.
Kagabashi is able to tag in and goes to town on Crawford with some chops and then his own flying shoulder tackle. There's a body slam and then the jumping leg lariat right across Crawford's face. Kobashi starts rubbing his forearm into Crawford's face because why not? And then this is just before hitting him with a downward elbow onto his face as well. So whereas, like, the Can-Ams are targeting basically Kikuchi's back, Kobashi decides, I'm gonna mess up Crawford's face here.
That might be just a little getting them back for that smug look on the apron earlier too, right?
So that could be it. Yeah. That could be it. Kobashi applies a rear chin lock while pressing his knee into small Crawford's back, but Crawford is able to escape with some kicks to Kobashi's face. Crawford keeps on Kobashi with some kicks to the chest and then hits a leg lariat, one of his own, that knocks Kobashi down. Kobashi reverses a whip and hits Crawford with a big lariat. Before he could pin Crawford, Crawford quickly crawls into his corner, tags in a fresh Furnace, who actually gets whipped to the ropes, and eats his own lariat. So there's no hot tag for Furnace. He just decides he's just going to eat the offense that Crawford was supposed to eat.
Yeah, basically. And it's the same thing. We'll get to it later, but I just love the way this match builds very subtly. Like, it doesn't just jump straight into a heat and then just hits you over the head with heat, and then one big hot tag. There's incremental, you know, hot tags. You know, Kikuchi gets to fire up, and then they get some heat on him, and then Kobashi gets to fire up, they'll get a little bit of heat on him, and then, you know, we're building from there.
Kikuchi is tagged in, and he and Kobashi hit a beautiful looking double drop kick on Furnace. Kikuchi tries to keep control of the match, but Furnace runs out of corner with a vicious looking lariat that knocks the smaller man down. Furnace press slams Kikuchi out of the ring and onto the floor. This opens the door for Crawford to get into the ring and assault Kobashi, while Furnace ragdolls Kikuchi by pressing him over his head. And then he throws him onto the timekeeper's table. And this is, I feel, the big turning point of the match. It's, I feel, the first real big high spot of the match, because it's the most dangerous looking thing so far. Yep. And it goes towards what you just said. It's a back and forth. Up until this point, it's a back and forth. There's not any one team gaining the advantage because they're evenly matched. And that's the story you want to tell, is that they're very kind of mirrors of one another in a lot of respects, the way the dynamics go. Crawford is Kikuchi, Kobashi is Furnace. And that's the dynamic both teams have. But this is the point where Furnace says, you know what? I'm not playing around anymore. I'm going to take it to another level by trying to injure this guy by throwing him onto the timekeeper's table.
And we're building off of, you know, when they had a little bit of control on Kikuchi, they went to the back. Well, now they're going to slam him on the table, and we're going to go right back to the back and take control. And I think this is kind of what Kikuchi's most famous for, is just getting his ass kicked and getting stretched. I don't think this is the first or only time I ever saw him get slammed onto the timekeeper's table. It's kind of a recurring bit for poor Tsuyoshi Kikuchi.
Kikuchi's facial expressions here are just great. They're great, generally speaking, but especially here, as you can clearly see on Kikuchi's face that he is having a miserable time right now. And he's always like kind of got a scowl on his face, even when he's like not even wrestling. Like, he just got the scowl on his face. But when he's wrestling and he's getting the heat put on him and he's getting stretched and he's getting ragdolled, my God, that scowl just gets bigger and bigger and greater and greater.
I don't know if I've ever seen the man smile, but certainly not when he's in the throes of action. Like, there's no smile, and he's all business, and he wears his anguish of pain on his face in every single match you're going to see of him, for sure.
There's a big Kikuchi call that goes out as Kobashi goes to help his partner and try to get him back into the ring. When he does get back in, Furnace grabs him in a bear hug, and Crawford climbs to the top rope and jumps from the top rope to hit the Can-Am's version of a Doomsday Device lariat. Crawford uses his momentum to carry himself over to Kobashi's corner to prevent him from bringing up the pin and Kikuchi, but Kikuchi is able to kick out. I just think it's such a great sequence, because just the coordination of both guys as a tag team, the Can-Ams I'm speaking of, and Crawford using the momentum to, like, okay, I'm going to now, Kobashi's going to come and try to break a pin, I got to stop him. Just such great psychology here.
And to add to that, when Crawford is running over to stop the breakup, Furnace immediately goes from holding Kikuchi up in the air. He gets slammed down in front of him, and then he does a jackknife pin straight out of the slam. Like, it's all, both of them are like just fluidly moving from one move to the next, all within the sequence. And it's also nice that it's like, yeah, it's a Doomsday Device, but it's kind of like an incremental, you know, he's not on his shoulders. They don't flip him off. Like, We're building here. We're getting to the big boys later, but I like this as like, this is a nice first attempt at a big double team move. Try to win the match. No? Okay, we're going to move on.
From there, Crawford comes in and applies a deep Boston crab. Poor Kikuchi working on his back again. But Kikuchi is able to reach the ropes. Crawford hits three snap suplexes in a row. Again, also like Ken Evans wrestled British Bulldogs many times in All Japan. Faced off against the Dynamite Kid many times. Really, this is kind of the North American version of the British Bulldogs, you know, Crawford and Furtis. The precision of Crawford's snap suplex is really beautiful looking. He goes for a pin, but Kobashi is able to break it up because, you know, at this point, if you get hit with three snap suplexes in a row, you're probably likely out of it. You probably will get pinned realistically if we were talking about wrestling being, you know, more of a legit combat sport. Kobashi, he has the wherewithal. That's probably it for him. I better go save him.
Yep. Yeah. And again, those snap suplexes hard on the lower back. We've been slammed on the table. We've been put in that nasty Boston crab. Kobashi sees the wear that's, you know, just incrementally building up on his partner, a back that's been abused countless times at this point. A save is needed and is logical for sure.
Kikuchi hits a desperation backdrop driver on Crawford, but the Canadian is able to hold on to Kikuchi and roll over to his corner to tag in Furnace. Furnace hits a great looking tilt-a-whirl backbreaker and applies his own deep Boston crab on poor Kikuchi. Kobashi comes in and kicks Furnace several times, but the big man won't break the hold until Kobashi slaps him in the face. It's not the kicks to the face, Daniel. It's the slap to the face that finally makes him break the hold.
Honestly, sometimes those hurt way more than like a flat sole of a boot versus, you know, the crevices and the just the wind up of a hand. Like, I think I'd rather be kicked by someone's boot than slapped. You know, slaps have a way of finding your ears too and getting into your neck. And no, thank you. I'd break the hold too if I was on that end of a Kobashi slap.
Crawford comes in and hits a fireman's carry into a barrel roll for a two count. He then applies a modified bow and arrow while the fans chant Kikuchi's name for support. Crawford then switches to a traditional bow and arrow, really working over Kikuchi's back. And like we said, this is like their strategy is like they want to isolate Kikuchi. They want to prevent Kobashi from tagging in. And while they get Kikuchi in there, they want to work on his back and try to either garner a submission or just knock the wind out of him from the pain of being slammed onto his back so hard that they can get a 1-2-3 on him.
Yeah, I mean, it's sound, technical, logical wrestling. You know, we've had some high impact stuff. We've gone back and forth, but now that we have control of this guy and we've managed to neutralize him in our side of the ring, let's wear on him and maybe that'll be enough to put him away and retain these belts.
Kobashi breaks it up with a leg drop to Crawford's face. Furnace tags in, but Kikuchi fires up with a forearm and another leg lariat, and this crowd is on their feet. Yet again, they love his comebacks. They absolutely love his comebacks.
Yeah, I mean, they love his comebacks. They love, honestly, I mean, a point that I'll make later, but like, I think they maybe love Kobashi more. And I know there's like a hierarchy there. And obviously there's the who's the bigger star versus who's the hometown star. But I mean, they cheer just as loud for when he tags in Kobashi and he goes wild on them. But they just want to cheer on these guys so badly. And any opportunity they get, be it a hope spot or a comeback, I mean, they're ready for it.
Speaking of whom, Kobashi hot tags in and hits thrust kicks and slams to both Furnace and Crawford. But the Can-Ams are able to overwhelm Kobashi, but that backfires and Kobashi ducks their double clothesline attempt and hits them with a double lariat and a backdrop driver on Furnace for a two count. Kobashi lariats Furnace in the corner and mounts the turnbuckles to hit a modified DDT. But Crawford cuts him off and shows the fans how pleased he is with himself to a chorus of boos. Again, he just poses for the crowd. Look, I cut him off. And they love to hate him for it. It's great.
Yep. Just little things like that. But then moves on. You know, he stops him. I mean, essentially kind of power bombs him to stop the kind of elevated DDT that Kobashi would do off the turnbuckles. Stops him with kind of like a single arm power bomb. gloats about it, and then, okay, now let's take care of business. Let's keep going. Yeah, I'm a bad guy, but I'm also a kick-ass wrestler, right?
This gives Furnace the chance to charge out of the corner and hit Kobashi with a lariat. Looks great. It's Furnace is, you know, like his agility, but his power game, like he can hit just as hard as any of the big boys in all of Japan in the 90s. Crawford goes to the top to hit a flying body press, but Kobashi gets his knees up. Kobashi crawls to his corner, but Crawford tries to hang on. Kobashi tags in Kikuchi and hits Crawford with an enziguri, and Kikuchi follows up with a diving headbutt, like you said, another influence from the Dynamite Kid. There's a fisherman suplex for a close two, maybe a big fan of Kurt Hennig, we don't know. Tiger Mask, probably influence from Tiger Mask there. Crawford hits an amazing-looking thrust kick straight to on Kikuchi's chin. Just the precision of that kick, beautiful. It sets up the Tiger Driver, but Kobashi comes in, but is met with a stiff clothesline and tossed out of the ring over the top rope by Crawford. Just a great sequence here. Again, we're back to the back and forth, but now we're hitting a crescendo here in the match.
The timing of Kobashi tag enziguri Kikuchi diving headbutt is like, that's something you would see in like modern, like an AEW tag or something nowadays, you know, but this is 30 plus years ago. Like the teamwork and the timing, it's so good and intricate and exciting, you know? And yeah, I also love the fact that it always kind of surprised me that Crawford got away with doing the Tiger Driver, like well into the 90s, like, but they like make it really important. And like, I don't think he hits it in this match, but like every time he tries to hit it, Kobashi's trying to stop him, or Kikuchi's fighting with all of his might to not get hit by this Tiger Driver, which is obviously made famous by their tag team partner in Mitsuharu Misawa.
I think with Crawford, he's likely able to do it because he's a junior heavyweight, like as a singles wrestler, and he's not necessarily facing Misawa all that often where it's going to be a thing. Maybe he asked Misawa, hey, do you mind if I use this in my matches? Like, we're not in the same division, so to speak.
It's still crazy. He's the biggest star in the company, and it's his move.
I would say I don't know to my best of my recollection that Crawford ever wins a match with the Tiger Driver. Maybe the only person who's allowed to win. But even then, you know what? At some point, Misawa doesn't even win the Tiger Driver anymore.
No, eventually, but probably by like 94, 95, he's not winning. He matches with it. Yeah, it's just a false finish. Yeah.
Crawford goes for the Tiger Driver, but Kikuchi blocks it. Furnace comes in and lifts Kikuchi on his shoulders, and Crawford hits another doomsday device. There's a one, a two, but a kick out. He kicks out of that. Crawford applies a vicious looking Cobra Clutch. The way he just torques him. Oh my God, it's amazing.
It's both of these back to back brutal. They do a more high impact version of the Doomsday Device. They flip Kikuchi off the shoulders, and this goes back to them playing subtle heel. Crawford goes for the pin. Furnace kind of walks off, and he's gloating with to the crowd with each successive count. One, two, we're gonna win. What, we didn't win this? You know, like and then yeah, the Cobra Clutch is brutal. It's the grossest thing in this match by far. Like, just, it's so vicious, just with how he's just twisting him and just shaking him back and forth. It's just violent, and like, I would believe it as a finish in any match, even in this match. Like, it's crazy.
This is the point where we talk about, you know, Kikuchi getting ragdolled. He's thrown onto the timekeeper table. This is the real point. He's getting fracked off. He used to just be treated like a child's toy by Crawford here with the Cobra Clutch. Let's see. Yes, Kobashi drops Furnace with a DDT on the outside while Crawford gets Kikuchi on the top turnbuckle. Kobashi blocks a superplex attempt and lifts Crawford onto his shoulders, where Kikuchi is able to hit a Doomsday Device missile dropkick. A variation of that, and the crowd is going crazy for this. Kobashi backflips Kikuchi onto a prone Crawford for a two count. Great looking double team move here.
Yep.
Kobashi tries for another flying tackle, but Crawford instead drives Kobashi face first into the mat. That must have hurt. Totally didn't look pleasant. Furnace comes in and hits a Frankensteiner. My God, the agility of this man. Unbelievable. But Kikuchi dives off the top rope to break up the pin to save his partner. Just another, again, what an amazing sequence that we're getting here.
The sequences are, they're back and forth and exciting.
The timing.
And the timing's great, and everything builds off of stuff we've already established. We've established, you know, the Doomsday devices. We had clothesline, bigger clothesline, missile drop kick, you know, and then same thing, the just little things. I love Crawford cutting off Kobashi's shoulder tackle by slamming his face into the mat. We've already discussed earlier in the match establishing how the shoulder tackle, as little and as, you know, inconsequential as it seems, it plays an important part in a lot of these big All Japan matches, especially, you know, Kobashi's known for jumping off his feet and hitting the big one, and Crawford would know that. And so he meets him in midair and stops his momentum and slams him down into the mat. And that sets up Furnace, who, like you said, is a big, powerful guy, but has such a nice Frankensteiner, and it's a viable finish in 1992. So
Crawford and Kobashi trade strikes until Kobashi hits a power slam, that Crawford kicks out of. He then slams him to the mat and signals for his moonsault press, but Furnace cuts him off until Kikuchi gets rid of the American, which allows Kobashi to go for the moonsault, but Crawford has wherewithal to roll out of the way. What a smart man.
Yeah, and Kobashi doesn't, I mean, it's moonsaults like these that took years off of his knees for sure, because he kind of comes up short and awkwardly lands kind of half his body on Crawford as he's rolling out of the way. And the other half of his body is his knees slamming into the mat. And it just looks like a car wreck. And, but it's, you know, it's 1992 and it's established that if Kobashi hits that moonsault, I mean, that's a match ender. And the Can-Ams know this.
Crawford goes for a pin on a downed Kobashi, who missed the moonsault with a European cradle, but Kobashi kicks out of that. The action is fast and furious, with both men trading advantage until Kobashi hits a double arm DDT for a two count. Mick Foley stole that from him, by the way.
Yes, he did.
He admits it too. Kobashi stays on Crawford and slams him down, mounts a top rope and hits the moonsault, and actually hits it for the 1, 2, 3, 22 minutes, 11 seconds, Dan. New All-Asia Tag Champions. The fans in Sendai are ecstatic with euphoric pleasure. They are feeling something that only you get once in a while in a wrestling match, where you just feel like I have taken the greatest narcotic in the world called beautiful professional wrestling that makes sense. And it's beautiful for the fans in Sendai here.
What? I don't know what to say after that analogy. I wonder how many title changes they ever got in that building too. You know, so many big title matches are in Tokyo, obviously, and maybe even like a secondary market like Osaka, certainly for New Japan. That's more of a New Japan market. But I mean, of course, it's the hometown guy. It's his tag partner, his big brother winning the match for him. It's that moonsault, like we said. I love the exchange of reversals between Kobashi and Crawford, setting up the DDT that, you know, allows him to hit the moonsault, all the while Kikuchi is fighting off Furnace on the floor and not letting him get back into the ring to break up the 1-2-3, and huge victory for the Super Generation Army.
In a great display of sportsmanship, the Can-Ams come back into the ring to shake the hands of the new champions and to strap now their All-Asia tag belts around their waist. I love, you don't have to see in every match for sure, but once in a while, if you see sportsmanship in wrestling, I really appreciate it.
Certainly in a title match. I think that, you know, keeps the realism and the real sports feel, you know. I think that's especially, you know, obviously you have title matches in feuds that are more based around hatred and blood and revenge and that sort of thing. But, you know, these guys don't necessarily hate each other. There are clear good guys and bad guys, but above all else, they're competitors, they're athletes, they're pro wrestlers. The most important thing about winning this match is winning the belts. It's not revenge. It's not hatred. And the Can-Ams recognize, like, hey, these guys were the better athletes tonight. We can respect that and shake their hands and congratulate them on being the better competitors.
My only quibble about this match is I do think Kikuchi should have got the pin.
Yeah.
But it's a minor quibble. I understand why Kobashi gets the pin. He's the bigger star. He's the guy they're going to like elevate to Triple Crown level, not Kikuchi. But it's in Sendai. I think they should have given him the pin. But regardless, this crowd loved it, loved the ending.
Yeah.
I just easily five for me, 5 stars. And like, I don't break the scale. 5 stars is top rating.
No, neither do I. It's clear cut. Like, I rewatched this match today. I hadn't watched it in probably 2 or 3 years. You know, every couple years, you know, the anniversary comes up. Maybe when it was the 30th anniversary a couple years ago, I rewatched it. Like I said earlier, timeless match. You know, it's 2024. It's a 5-star match. In 1992, it was a 5-star match. 10 years from now, it'll be a 5-star match. You know, these people who go back and say, oh, you know, things don't hold up or whatever. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with that. This is a match that holds up, regardless of what your opinion on that logic towards watching and analyzing pro wrestling is. This is a match that you could watch at any time and maybe not even have familiarity with any of these guys. You could maybe have a cursory knowledge of Japanese wrestling or any of the four competitors in this match, and I think you will find yourself invested and sucked into it, and it is clearly a 5-star match.
I want to make a couple of points before we move on to the trivia part of the show and get into more kind of final plugs from Daniel here. One is, this is like, I believe, the third reign of 5 that the Can-Ams have with the All Asia Tag Belts. They are perennial kind of like, you know, holders of those titles in the 90s. Kikuchi, this is one of 2 major titles he won in All Japan. He only had 1 reign with the All Asia Tag Belts, with this one with Kobashi. He only had 1 reign with the World Junior Heavyweight title, which surprised me when I looked into that. I thought he would have had at least 2 or 3 runs with that belt, but Masanobu Fuchi had a stranglehold on that title. And outside of that, he never won any Noah Junior title, but he did team with Yoshinobu Kanemaru to win the IWGP Junior Tag Belts in an awesome like program
the New Japan Juniors. I was hoping we were going to talk about that, but that Noah Juniors versus New Japan Juniors feud of like 2002-ish, I want to say. It's great. And it honestly put Kikuchi back on the map because, you know, it's not that long after this that he kind of gets moved down the card and just becomes kind of a mid-card, undercard, 6-man tag comedy guy almost. And I don't know if that's because the physical toils kind of took it out on him or what, but he kind of has a rebirth, a revitalization in Noah in the early 2000s. And he's grumpy old man Kikuchi, a part of this Noah New Japan Junior feud. And if you haven't seen it, those tag matches are so good.
And the interesting dynamic between Kanemaru and Kikuchi is that Kanemaru is in Akiyama's Sternness faction, and Kikuchi is part of Kobashi's Burning faction. And they're feuding because Akiyama turned on Kobashi in the early beginning of Noah and formed, I'm not with you anymore, I'm forming my own faction. It's called Sternness. And Kanemaru was the key junior in that. And Kikuchi is like, kind of like, I don't know, like there's, you know, Kobashi, there's like probably Tim and Honda, who's like his tag team partner. And then there's Kenta, and then there's Kikuchi. So he's 4th man on the rung, but my guy, just pairing him with Kanemaru, who works in a different faction to take on the rival company in New Japan and their juniors.
Yep.
Fantastic stuff. I'm pretty sure someone on DVDR made a compilation of that.
Probably, because I mean, it centers around Liger on the New Japan side, obviously, but like I remember Liger teams with Kanemoto, I think, at some points. He teams with Minoru Tanaka at some points. Like, it's kind of a revolving cast of, you know, it doesn't really matter if we're aligned or not. We are New Japan versus these are Noah guys.
Kiko and Jado do this. Where they win a title match, like a title defense, like Kanemaru Kikuchi. Ghetto and Jado just come because they're firmly now New Japan guys.
Yep.
And they just cut this awesome promo on them. We're going to get those belts. You know, Ghetto's doing all the talking, obviously. And he's just cutting a promo on them. It's great. The intensity of like these guys who were considered outsiders in New Japan, but now we're New Japan. you're not keeping those tag belts. Those are our tag belts, and we want them. It's great. Go seek it out, folks. The New Japan versus Noah Jr. feud of the early 2000s. But
I mean, other than this match, I mean, this is Kikuchi's. This is the greatest day of Kikuchi's life, probably. I mean, maybe if he's a married man, I can't speak on his behalf. But of his professional career, this is the ultimate. But that feud with New Japan down the line is also really good, for sure.
It's a really nice kind of, I don't want to say epilogue, but kind of an addendum to his career. I feel like he got that run with this really hot feud in a time when Japanese wrestling, especially New Japan, was not that hot.
No one
was pretty hot at the time, but it was kind of the hottest thing in Japanese wrestling for several months. But that being said, we'll take care of some business. So we have two pairs of tickets for the June 30th Put Up or Shut Up show from Smash Wrestling down at the Rec Room in Toronto that Daniel will be wrestling on. He'll be taking on Psycho Mike. And for you to get these tickets, you have to email me at whpark9@gmail.com with the answer to these two trivia questions. So, you know, one question per entry, or, you know, we'll say that you have to answer one of the questions. We'll decide. I don't know how many, you know, we'll see how many entries we get, but we come with two questions and they're both Daniel Makabe related. What's the first question, Daniel?
So, as WH mentioned on the show earlier, that also on this Smash card will be Kevin Blackwood, a buddy of mine, versus someone I'm very familiar with, one Mr. Timothy Thatcher. The first question is, how many times in a one-on-one singles match have I wrestled Timothy Thatcher?
Okay, that's question number one. How many times has Daniel wrestled Timothy Thatcher in one-on-one singles competition? Send the number to me at my email address. And if you're the first person to answer the question, I will forward your name to Smash Wrestling. What's the second question?
Second question relates to me wrestling in Toronto. The last time I wrestled in Toronto, many, many years ago, who was the last match? It's a singles match. Who's the last person that I wrestled in a singles match in the city of Toronto many, many years ago? WH may have been in person there. We can't remember if he was there or not, but I definitely did meet him that weekend. But yes, who's the last person that I wrestled in a one-on-one match in the city of Toronto?
Okay, and send the name of that person to my email. And if you're the first person I pick with the correct answer, I will send you, and you will be able to take whoever wins these tickets. You'll just give me your full name. I'll send that off to Smash Wrestling. They will in turn let you bring a friend to watch not only Put Up or Shut Up as a live show, but if you want to stay for another 5 hours to watch AEW's Forbidden Door. No, what? They just had a pay-per-view. It was 5.5 hours long. I'm not pulling this number out of top, out of thin air. This is what AEW does. They run five hour plus pay-per-view. So if you can watch like maybe a three-hour live wrestling show, stick around for about an hour while they do setup for the pay-per-view portion, and you want to stay for another 5 hours, come on down. I'll probably be there.
The one thing I will say is the next day is Canada Day. It's July 1st, so you might not have to go to work the next day. So stick around and watch AEW. I'll be there. I'm going to fly home the next day. So
there you go.
I'll be hanging out.
You'll be hanging. Maybe we'll be sitting at the same table or something.
That sounds like a plan to me.
We could do that. We're going to try to meet up before the show. Maybe we'll see how your schedule looks, how my schedule looks. But listen, even if not, we'll just hang out at the show.
Sounds good.
When you're not wrestling, I'll probably just talk to you for a lot of it. We'll watch if Kevin Blackwood and Timothy Thatcher are before you or after you. Let's watch it together. We'll watch it together.
Yep.
All right. So once again, Daniel Makabe, thank you so much. Even though you're retiring from in-ring competition, you'll. If I send you a message and say, hey, do you want to be on an episode again? Hopefully you'll say, I'm not retired from being on the show.
I'll always have time for this show. I love this show. I listen to it every month. And like I said, it helps me rekindle my love for the greatest era of professional wrestling, as we've discussed, 1980s. And especially, I really like 1990s, I should say, All Japan Pro Wrestling. I really like the 80s as well. Just in general, it's great to get to watch these matches and talk about them with you and get people who may have not seen these matches talking about them as well. It's just nice to shine light on truly legendary professional wrestling matches that influenced me and a lot of my peers and fans all over the world, you know?
And if you have a chance to see Daniel Russell in person, take it from me, who I've had the pleasure. He's an amazing person to watch. If you love technical wrestling, he's so good, so smooth in the ring. I don't want to embarrass him, but if you're in Ontario and you get a chance to see his last three matches in our province, Ottawa for C4, again, Guelph, who for
365 in Guelph,
for 365 in Guelph and for Smash Wrestling, on June 30th, which I will be, hopefully I should be attending, but, yeah, it'll be fun. If you see me, hey, come say hi. I'll probably be wearing some of Daniel's gear, so I won't be wearing my gear. He'll be wearing some of his merch, which you should buy from his tables, because you're probably not going to see anything after he retires.
Probably so, not. I'm hoping not. To not have anything left over by then. So
maybe if all the fans in Ottawa haven't snapped everything up and you're lucky in Guelph and Toronto to get some, you pick something up from him. It's great looking stuff. I have two of his t-shirts because you all know I don't wear anything I think is garbage. So there you go. So that's my endorsement of that.
I appreciate that, WH. Yeah.
No problem. Anything. Those are great shirts. I love the blue with the yellow, the rock and roll theme one, and then the punk rock theme one, and this UWFI Fujiwara Gumi inspired logo ones. They're both great. But yeah, anything to plug besides what we just talked about?
If you don't already follow me on social media, Twitter and Instagram at Danny Makabe, DanielMakabe. That's where you'll find about all my final matches. And yeah, by the time you're watching this, I've got 6 weeks left as a professional wrestler, unless one specific wrestler from Aberdeen, Washington, who did speak of seeing a recent match I had versus Zack Sabre Jr., and being quite enthusiastic about it. I'm leaving that as a caveat. I'm retiring on July 12th, unless Brian Danielson gives me the call out, then I'll wrestle him. That's the only exception I'm making. July 12th is the end. Scenic City Invitational, Chattanooga, Tennessee. There are people traveling from all over the world. There's people coming from Germany. There are people coming from Japan, all over the United States and Canada. They're descending upon the scenic city in Chattanooga, Tennessee to see my final match. The opponent may be announced by the time this airs. I don't want to spoil it just in case it hasn't, but will be announced very soon. If you can't be there in person, it will be live on IWTV, which is, I think, IWTV.live, and it's $10 a month and it's well worth your money. I think it's a great streaming service. There's a very interesting documentary about myself called The Life Of. Please watch it. I get a kickback. And I just think there's a lot of, if you're a fan of independent wrestling, it's well worth your money. There's promotions from literally all over the world, including Toronto, whose product is on there. And yeah, follow me. Check out some matches on YouTube. That aforementioned match that Brian Danielson liked against Zack Sabre Jr. actually went up on YouTube today. So, which was days ago when we recorded this, but if you haven't seen it yet, check it out on YouTube and give me a follow. And thank you as always to the people at Post Wrestling and WH Park, and I love doing these shows. I appreciate you guys.
And also, if you want to get good music recommendations, he has excellent music taste that he likes to share with people on social media.
I play in bands. We're not doing anything currently, but there's stuff coming in the future. One of my bands may have just recorded a cover that's coming out on a comp shortly. That's the first time I've said that publicly. And another one of my bands might be playing a live show in the fall. That might be a live soundtrack to a classic silent film. So if you're in Greater Vancouver, look out on my social media for all things to do with wrestling, and shortly thereafter, all things to do with my bands. So,
you know, if I ever, one day I will make the trip out to the West Coast to go to Vancouver, and I'll hit you up.
Have you ever been here before?
No, I've never been to Vancouver. I plan on doing it.
I mean, I'm obviously biased, but I genuinely think it's the most beautiful place on earth. But if you're, you know, a fan of, you know, cuisine from all over the world, but we have a huge Asian population too, obviously. So some of the best Asian food in North America is here in Vancouver. And yeah, it's just a beautiful city to hang out.
Well, I'll hit you up and maybe we can coordinate. You could take me around the city.
I absolutely.
Music spots and food spots and stuff like that.
100% would do that for sure.
All right. So on behalf of Daniel, as he winds down his career in wrestling, but not his career showing up on this show in the future, my name is W.H. Park. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for supporting at chopped-tees.com. Long and winding road. MCU later. The post-ProRes stuff. It's all there. Along with post-wrestling, Poison Rana, the wellness policy, What Up Doe, all these great other podcasts that are affiliated with post-wrestling are up there. And like a bunch of other brands that our good friend Richard Avian has put up on the site. And go check it out, chopped-tees.com. And until next time, I will say goodbye.